Hello and welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and this is my podcast. Yo, how you guys doing? Today is February 27th, 2017, the last day of the second month of the 2017 year AD. What does AD mean again? After Don Rickles? No, I can't even think of anything clever to say. As was exemplified with my terrible reference. So, you know, this year, it kind of feels like it's already been a year, but it's only been 2 months. It's like so much has happened. So much has been going on in the world. You've had to, like, keep on your toes every day because things are changing quickly. The changing of the guards. Excuse me, I had some air come up in my throat. I didn't mean to pause dramatically, but it just, it happened that way. Sorry, I don't want to speak on my glottal fry, my vocal fry. Oh, I could just speak on my vocal fry. No, I want a full supported breath. You know, I did this, sort of, what I didn't realize, they didn't actually explain it to me that it was going to be a silent retreat, but I did a silent retreat yesterday, Sunday, in the morning, just from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. It wasn't anything, like, crazy, but is it pretty incredible just sort of being in a space with other people with agreed upon silence? I mean, I guess that's called a library, but still, libraries have whisperings of people asking the librarians questions, homeless people muttering to themselves, children squealing. Unless it's like a private university library or some sort of research library where you need to go through metal detectors and take out all your recording devices and electronic devices to go to. I cannot remember what I was talking about. Oh yeah, the silent retreat. And we were doing these basic things like these sort of mindfulness exercises where, you know, one was simply a breathing exercise. And it was just like, hey, just be mindful of your breath coming in and going out. And it's interesting because these are things that we do automatically, but sometimes we're so unconscious of them that we don't even realize how much they do affect us when we do them properly. Another example would be, we had this walking meditation where we kind of went outside. The whole thing took place inside, but then we went outside and it was kind of in the middle of the city. There was a lot going on. There was a flea market happening across the street. There were lots of people on the sidewalks. There were cars. There was so much stimulus happening. And yet, you know, we were just walking around silent, and I noticed so many things that I had never noticed before, simply because my focus had changed when I was outside walking, exploring. And again, you know, the same thing happened. We had this eating meditation where we simply just ate. We chose food from a table, and then we brought it back to our little place, and we ate the food. And I explored the texture, the taste, the aftertaste, the combination of taste, the different flavor palettes that, you know, would evoke different sensations in my body. I mean, it was amazing how much information you can get just by slowing down and eating food. And I got to thinking, you know, these are things that we have to do on a regular basis anyway. These are survival things, right? We have to breathe. We have to travel. I mean, you could say that that's not a survival thing, but for people who have jobs and for people who have to get out of the house and for people, you know, it is a survival thing. You have to travel from one place to another. And eating is also a survival thing. Well, if you just change the focus of it, right? I mean, so much time I spend eating, I think about other things. I am engaged in watching something or reading something or any number of things except for my food. Or when I'm traveling, you know, I'm simply thinking about getting from one place to another. I'm saying, oh, I gotta get to this place. Well, I thought, you know, what if I trusted the process that, yes, by eating, I would finish my meal, and by traveling, I would get from point A to point B, that I just actually, you know, took in the experience of it, changed my focus on the actual event, rather than being in my head about what was before or what's after. And I don't know why that dawned on me so brightly, but it just became this fundamental shift in my thinking. And I thought, wow, you know, we can take advantage of any number of these situations. I mean, it's simply shifting your perspective on these things. And I know the Buddhists sort of call, you know, they don't believe in good and bad. They have this phrase, this saying called changing poison into medicine. And the joke is, I just got a divorce. That's great, you know. Because something that's seemingly bad is actually really great. Just because it's change. Excuse me, I just hit my desk. And change is inevitable, right? So it's kind of, you know what it is? It's surfing on the moment. That's simply all it is. It's enjoying the power of the water around you. And you could get really good at navigating those waves, but no matter how good you get at navigating them, those waves are more powerful than you are, right? Just like the moment's going to be the moment. You can't shape a moment. You can only react to it or frame it in the way that you want to see it. So there, I guess there was an example of that. You know, last night, if you watched the Oscars, the big thing that people are talking about is that the Oscar went to La La Land, and then after a few of the producers made their speeches, they said, oh, we were mistaken, the Oscar goes to Moonlight. Now, imagine your La La Land up there, and you're thinking, oh my God, I just had this opportunity ripped out from under me. This is so embarrassing. I'm in front of everybody. I just said my acceptance speech, and now they are taking this away. Whose fault is this? I demand to know answers. This is a great example of grace under fire. This is what happened. And, you know, you could argue that the body language was a little bit passive-aggressive, or, you know, however you want to call it. But you know, it played out as such that that the director, you know, snatched the envelope card from Warren Beatty's hand, and Chazelle said, it really says La La Land. It really says Moonlight. This is not a joke. Look, right here. It says it right here. And you know what I want? I'd like nothing more than to congratulate Moonlight on such an amazing film, you know, or something to that effect. So he took that and, you know, processed it immediately, what was happening on a stage full of thousands and millions more watching at home, realizing that, you know, this film that he poured his blood, sweat, and tears into didn't actually win, but something happened, and now it went to a different group of artists. Well, I could think of a lot less graceful ways of dealing with that, right? But as an artist, you really have to sort of surf the moment and realize what's happening and realize, you know, that sometimes you can't necessarily, now, you know what? Scrap that. It doesn't matter if you're an artist or not. You're a conscious human being. Now, I'm thinking of a scenario here. You know, I know this would never happen this way, but say that the presidential race, you know, required the two presidential nominees to be in the same room in front of a lot of people, and it was all on national television, right? Let's just say that it became a spectacle, such as the Oscars, you know, and somebody pulled out a card, or they read on the screen, and they said, and the presidency goes to, and then they said, Donald Trump, and Donald gets up there, he's like, all right, wow, thank you, thank you. I'm honored to be the president of the United States. And then literally 2 minutes later, someone in a suit comes up, whispers something in someone's ear, and Hillary Clinton comes up on stage, and, you know, they have to explain, oh, actually, Donald Trump didn't win the presidency, Hillary Clinton did. I'm trying to imagine what Donald Trump would do in that situation. Now, would he get vocal in the moment? Would he refuse? Would he say, no, I won? No, I won. They just told me I won. Or would he sort of sit there in shock, in silence, which he's been known to do at times, and then later be vocal about it on Twitter or on news shows or something like that, you know? I think dealing with these kinds of moments is different for different kinds of people. When something so huge like that is taken away from a narcissist, I wonder what would happen. Like, let's just say, you know, for example, that we were able to impeach Donald Trump and then he was charged for treason and he actually went to prison. Let's just say that happened. I wonder how vocal he would be, you know, after getting knocked down a few notches, knocked down a few pegs, how vocal he would actually be with his followers, with whoever, you know. Would he say, oh, I was just trying to do what was best for America, this and that, even after we find out that he's, you know, been in cahoots with Putin? Or would he double down like he's been known to do and just say, no, this is ridiculous, I was framed, and spin it into this huge conspiracy theory? Now, I wouldn't put that past him, and I know certainly Alex Jones and InfoWars and Breitbart and all those crazy right-wing, excuse me, you know what, I do not want to use the term crazy, even in those whose views are in opposition to me. I want to be empathetic that they feel that their views are valid, but I also want to state that they are not on the majority of people's collected reality. So, you know, I remember Dave Chappelle said that saying someone's crazy is probably the worst thing you can do, right? Because you can't refute that. You can't say, no, I'm not crazy, because it's already out there. So if anyone believes it, then that's now you. You're crazy, right? Like, there's personalities out there that people think are crazy. Like Gary Busey, people think he's crazy, right? Well, what if he's not crazy? You know, what if he's just a few links away from our reality? Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to say. It's also, you know, like, we're finding out so much about autism and things like that, where it's, we're able to integrate people that are on a different spectrum than the collected population. We're able to integrate them and even celebrate them in ways that we didn't see possible before. And I think we're seeing this a lot in fictional works and movies and plays and TV shows and things like that, but also in studies and in day-to-day interactions and in our public education system. You know, we're kind of realizing that there really are fewer and fewer differences between people if we're able to empathize with them and we're able to understand some basic things, right? Like, we're all human beings. We all suffer. We all need compassion, which is, to put it simply, kindness towards our suffering, right? So I think if you can really just sort of boil it down just to the very essence of the fact that we're all living, or, you know, you could even be broader, we all inhabit this planet, or we're all part of this universe, you know, we all come from stardust, whatever you want to say, something that actually unites us rather than divides us. I know that there's such, there's so many small talks right now about division. You know, oh, we need to divide these people from these people. We need to keep this person out from this person. You know, it's when you really think about it, when you look from so far away and you look at the earth, you go, where are the lines? I don't see a line. I don't see a line between the United States of America and Mexico. Where is that line? I mean, even if there was a wall, would there be a line? These are agreed upon concepts that we have countries and that we must be different enough that it requires an amazing vetting process for, you know, one person that was born on this geographical parcel of land to come and live their life on this geographical parcel of land. It's like, okay, what hoops must I jump through to be in this part of the world? Well, it's a concept that I think in theory is at its root, you know, good. I think it's well-intentioned, but you know, that any sort of theory put into practice automatically is flawed, right? Because we are humans, and if you look at it, humanity is flawed. Now, what that means, I think it means that people have expectations, and some things do not live up to their expectations, therefore flawed, right? Like, if the sun didn't come out tomorrow, you'd say, well, that's a flaw. That shouldn't happen. The sun's come out every single day since the beginning of time, probably before. You know, this is a flaw in the system. It's not a flaw. There's no such thing as a flaw. A flaw is simply something that's out of character, right? But out of character is really just an agreed upon set of circumstances that are there because we can, that we sort of solidify because of the history of the behavior and the relationship of these events and things and people and all this stuff, right? So if we really truly believe that anything is possible in any given moment, then we realize that there is no flaw. And we also realize this interesting concept that if there is no past and there is no future, then we are perfect. And the definition of that is because we cannot change the past and we cannot change the future because there is none. So in this moment, we are perfect. And now, the rub is, you're perfect. Now change. Because perfection isn't a constant. Perfection is simply an idea. I don't even know. But if I were to speculate, I would speculate that perfection is that surfboard. You know, the surfer who's one with the surfboard and one with the ocean and has no expectations, sees no flaws, doesn't think ahead, doesn't think behind, just lives completely in that moment. I don't know if that's a great example, but it's a visual that I can grasp onto. But it's so difficult, isn't it? We're in traffic. Well, someone cuts us off. We're not angry because, you know, because they cut us off. We're angry because we're now one car length behind where we need to get to. We're angry because that's a person who's not recognizing my needs. You know, we're angry because that's a person who, you know, could have put me in danger, right? Well, what about them? Why did they do it? Why did they cut me off in traffic? Because maybe they need to get somewhere. You know, they need to prove that they are better than me or faster than me. They need to rev their engine, so to speak. Or maybe it's retaliation for someone that cut them off three car lengths back. It's a big butterfly effect. I read this study that when one person breaks in traffic, it actually creates about 2 minutes of traffic backup, just because they break, and then the person behind them breaks, and then, you know, so on and so forth. So you've got this sort of butterfly effect, and that is just from one person breaking. And it's simply because they were too close to something, right? They weren't coasting. They weren't cruising. They wanted to get just a little bit further ahead, but you can't get a little bit further ahead if whatever's in front of you isn't going faster than you, because, you know, the moment is only the moment. So you look at these concepts and you think, wow, just this tiny little gesture, this tiny little action that I did really affected everything around me. You know, and you could sort of see it happening if you were in a helicopter overlooking the whole scene. You see one car break, and then the next car, the next car, the next car, and then in a time lapse, you see all of a sudden there's a 15-minute standstill, right? Those things don't come out of nowhere. Traffic doesn't come out of nowhere. Traffic comes from the imperfection of humans driving. Now, the theory is that once traffic is fully automated, there will be no such problems. There will be no congestion. There'll be no need for traffic signals because automation would sort of have their own internet of communication, and one car can communicate with another car and say, "Oh, I'm coming from west to east, and you're coming from south to north. And if I lower my speed about a half a mile per hour, and you raise your speed a half a mile per hour, we will not collide, and we will not need to, slow down that much," or whatever it is, you know. So you don't have traffic lights, you don't have stop signs or yield signs or anything like that. Now, the only thing that I would see why you would have to stop is probably for a train. I think you have to stop for a train, or if you're at a drawbridge, you'd have to stop for a boat. But those are kind of the only large things that I can see cars really having to slow down, besides picking up and dropping off their customers or their packages or whatever. There's a helicopter coming. Speaking of helicopters, maybe automation will become flight automation. Maybe we'll all, you know, my friend Nelson invented a jetpack, and this thing is so cool. It literally is a jetpack, and you see videos of it. You can look at videos online. I think if you look up Supertramp films, they made like a pretty cool YouTube video of it. But Nelson, you know, he's like this really cool, you know, guy who's been an inventor his whole life. And this jetpack can now go for like 10 minutes at a time. And it's so steady. You can go as high as you want, as far as the fuel can take you. You can travel any way you want, 360 degrees. I mean, there was one shot where there was a bird that was flying next to him. And I'm thinking to myself, this is absolutely incredible. But humans are able to fly just by themselves with no, you know, vehicular apparatus. It's literally something that you suit up into, and now all of a sudden we've got the characteristics of birds. And this is happening right now. These are realities, you know. This man invented this thing. It's already in existence. So who knows what the future holds? You know, the future could hold, wow. I mean, you look at it, that moment right before, you know, Warren Beatty opened that envelope. It was basically Schrodinger's envelope, wasn't it? Because he opens it, and there's multiple realities that could play out, but the two realities that actually did play out were, well, La La Land could win, or Moonlight could win. And nobody knew. Nobody knows what is going to happen. Now, you could say that it's a complete flaw in the system because it's completely uncharacteristic for the accounting firm, Pricewaterhouse, to mislabel or to misappropriate an envelope, give it to the wrong person, or accidentally give him the wrong, you know, the wrong category. You could say that's a flaw, but right at that moment when he's opening the envelope, everything's perfect. But then it has to change. And I think we're going to end it there. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's all the time we have today at Robcast Podcast. Be sure to tune in every week to find the latest Robcast Podcast at officialrobcast.podomatic.com. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at officialrobcast. Thanks so much for listening. Stay alive.